giving. I would say probably an extremely touchy subject. One that I think is touchy for a few different reasons. We have tried here at Hillcrest to live what we teach, especially when it comes to giving. We have tried to not make giving a normal part of our teaching curriculum for fear that someone might think that when we teach on giving that somehow Hillcrest is trying to guilt you, coerce you, manipulate you into giving to Hillcrest. I want you to know that Hillcrest, the leadership, myself as your pastor, try to be as faithful as we can to say, God, we trust whatever comes in is what we need. So we don't try to do money grabs. We don't, go door to door, and we don't like to, we just don't like that approach because we think that giving is something very personal for people. But we think that there are some things that the scriptures teach about giving, and it's important for us to talk about it. So today, if you hear in my teaching me asking you to give more and feeling guilty about that, I want you to know that is not what I'm saying. That's just a lack of my ability to communicate well, all right? Everybody is at a different place in this journey. Everybody has different thoughts and feelings and experience when it comes to giving. But the scriptures are pretty clear about a few things. I want to talk about those today. But I think that the reason why giving is such a touchy subject has a lot to do with the church. Because the church has not always done such a good job communicating about giving, modeling giving, or really treating those that give to the church with the kind of respect that they need. And dare I say, there may even be some spiritual manipulation along the way. I think some things that I think about when I think about the church and giving and people's responses to giving has a lot to do with what you see on television that the church communicates or those that claim to be a part of the church or followers of Christ communicate. There have been some individuals, and forgive me for using some names, but I want to be honest about the Christian community here. But like one example would be this man, Benny Hinn. Benny Hinn, in his $3 million, 7,200 square foot mansion that has seven bedrooms and 10 car garages, when you watch his program, he will tell you to give to him. And I wonder what we give to when we give to him. You might remember a name of a man named Peter Popoff. He was discovered as a fake healer. He would wear an earpiece, and his wife would get information about people in the congregation, and she would feed it into his ear, and he could pick out birth dates and people's names and exactly what ailed them. People just thought he was a miracle worker, but she was feeding this in his ear, and someone broke into the transmission and recorded it, and they played it on television and exposed him. But in his ministry, he would ask for, in his ministry, he gave himself a salary of $15 million a year because that's just what a pastor needs. Jimmy Swaggart, $140 million per year. Jim and Tammy Baker, $130 million per year. Oral Roberts. Maybe a great university, probably have a lot of feelings about that, but when he needed cash back on January 4th, 1987, you can listen to this recording, but he told his people through letter and through his radio broadcast that if he didn't get $8 million by March, okay, this was January 4th, if he didn't get $8 million by March, God would take him home. He said God would take him from this earth, he would die if the money didn't come in. It came in at $160,000 per day. Yeah, he hit his goal. All you have to do is turn on CBN or the 700 Club, and you will get manipulated to give with the promise that God will give you back more in material wealth. I don't know if you're like me, but I just sometimes feel so cruddy when I watch TV and certain organizations show what I would call shock ads or shock Christian ads, hoping to guilt you into giving as they show you horrible images of starvation. You turn on Christian radio, at times they have their seasons of what I would call begging and threatening. Threatening to shut off your station if you don't give, or try to convince you that people are going to go to hell if you don't open up your wallet. And then there's the church, with its capital campaigns and sermons on giving, and good golly, they pass that plate every time we get together. But is the church all to blame for our feelings about giving? There is, of course, the issue of the hearts of God's people. As followers of Christ, our response to his call is for us to be giving people. Jesus said that wherever our heart is, that is where our treasure will be. I want you to think about that for a minute. Wherever our heart is, there our treasure will be. And if you're like me, you want to justify that your heart can be in many places at once. Wherever your heart is, that is where your treasure is. And your life, and your experience, will all point to that treasure. We love our money. Myself included. Way too much. We rely on our money too much. It's what we're taught. It's part of our culture. It's part of our upbringings. But I would tell you this, that relying on your money means you no longer have to rely on God. Many of us here do not need to ever trust God for our provisions. We don't need or have a need for heaven when I can go down to Best Buy and purchase it. And that may seem funny, but I'm serious. The thing that was so intriguing about God's people when they were in the desert is when they heard about the land flowing with milk and honey, they needed milk and wanted honey. This was a positive thing. Do you want to go to a land filled with flowing with milk and honey? No, because Hy-Vee has that. And I don't want milk. I want something different than milk. Honey? Come on. Our need for God isn't there like it should be when we rely on our money. But the problem is that when we rely and we love and we follow our money, our hearts deceive us every time. And though we want to honor God with our finances, we don't. And we make excuses, myself included. Excuses like this. Oh, 10%? That is not biblical. I'll give when I have a little more. Well, I'm going to get some other debt and details taken care of first, and then, you know, then I will. Well, that church or that, they don't really need it. Look at them. They're doing fine. I'll worry about it some other time. I'm just not going to do it right now. I'm not going to worry about it. Well, I give them my time, and my time, I mean, that's worth my tithe. I mean, at least a percentage. I mean, I'm worth a lot. Well, you know, I've been having to give some money to my brother, and that's going to have to be my tithe for now. My service to the church, am I serving on a lot of boards in a lot of different capacities? That's my tithe. The truth is this. When we become unwilling to give, it happens when our hearts are turned towards the worship of money. When money becomes our God, we hold on to it and we don't want to give it away for anything, and good for us, because you better feel that way about the thing you worship. So today, I want to be as honest and as open and as transparent as I can with you about the truth about the church and money. All right? Let's look at the first truth and lie. Truth. God wants us to give. Lie. If we give, we will become rich. Malachi 3:10. Bring all the tithes into the storehouses so there will be enough food in my temple. If you do, says the Lord of heaven's armies, I will open the windows of heaven for you. I will pour out a blessing so great you won't have enough room to take it in. Try it. Put me to the test. I want you to know that in the scriptures, this is the only time God invites his people to test him. Blessings come through our giving. Without being a giving person, you will miss the blessings. You'll miss the blessings in your lives, but certainly others will miss the blessings in their lives from your faithfulness in giving. But the blessings that you will receive as a result of giving and giving generously will not be the kinds of blessings that you hear from TV evangelists. It is not the health and wealth gospel. If you need $2 and all you have is one, the TV evangelist will say, give us your last dollar you have and God will give you two. It's not true. It won't happen. And if it does happen, it's just not the way God works in the scriptures. Especially when the idea is that I get the $2 so I can have more luxury for myself. Now you may discover that as you give, God gives you more, but that's out of the principle that the person who does well with a little and is generous with a little, God may give that person more, but not so that their lifestyle goes way up, but so they become faithful with a little, they'll be faithful with a lot, and they'll become larger givers. I talked to you about Chuck Collings last week, a man that gave to our family to help us go through seminary. He gave away 90% of his income and only kept 10, like a reverse tithe idea. I believe that as he was faithful with a little, God made him faithful with more. But his lifestyle didn't go up. He just gave more and more and more, and he was incredibly brilliant in business, an incredibly brilliant mind, and God gave this incredible gift to this man of his brilliance with business so that he could also be brilliant in how he put that money back into the kingdom. But if you need a big screen TV, please do not give to God thinking he will return to you with a big screen. If you want more for yourself, don't buy the lie that you need to give it to the church and somehow God will lump it upon you so that you have masses and million-dollar mansions and all the other things. It's not true. But the scriptures do say put God to the test on this one. Even though it doesn't seem like you can give or should give, this is the one time God says, try it and see what happens. I don't know of another way for you to discover those blessings than to give and receive them. Next, truth and lie. Truth. Giving helps us keep our priorities straight, but the lie, giving will hurt financially. Proverbs 28:7 says, whoever gives to the poor will lack nothing, but those who close their eyes to poverty will be cursed. This idea is called stewardship. Stewardship means that we as stewards do not have ownership of what we have. It's been given to us to care for, to manage, to do well with, but the ownership of it is not that of the steward. And we, in our understanding of God and his sovereignty, are stewards of what he has given us. It is not ours to have. It's something that he has given us to care for. I have to remind my children of this often. There are times I may go into my child's room, and they may say, Dad, get out of where? My room. In which I promptly remind them, it's my room. Don't go through my things. Oh, those are my things. You see, my children own nothing. But they are stewards of what I give them. I give them a room to decorate, to put their posters up, to live in, to have their private space, to have a place to sleep, a place to call their own. And my expectation is they are good stewards with that. If they start knocking holes in my room, I get upset. I want them to treat my room in a respectful way as the owner of that room. Now, they are stewards of it, just like we're stewards of God's, which then I also have to remember that even as the words come out of my mouth, that it's my room, it's not even my room. It's God's room. It's God's house. God is the creator of everything that ever was. Now, he has put us here, and he made us too, so he owns us, okay? We're not even our own. And we have been able to take these elements that he's created and turn them into iPods and turn them into, you know, various things. We even take trees and make paper out of it, and then we take these various plants and extracts, and we make color, and we put it on the paper, and then we trade it back and forth as if it's super valuable, okay? But the paper and the ink, everything is God's. There's not a bit of it you can claim that is yours. He is the owner of everything, and whatever you have, he gave to you. And he gave it to you to be a steward of. It's tough, I know, because when the paycheck comes, that's my paycheck. God, when I cash it and I get all those greenbacks, those are mine. And when the plate comes by, I'm going to give you this little one. The rest of this, God, it's mine. Like, you didn't earn it. You didn't work for it, God. I did. A steward is someone that understands that all that they have has been given to them to manage and to care for. Which means our homes are his. I know your name's on the deed. But it's his to be used for his glory. We are stewards caring for the master's property. Our cars, they're his. Our education, it's his. Our children are not ours, they are his. Given to us for a short period of time to be stewards of these little living creatures. Our jobs, they belong to God. They are to be used for his glory. Our bank accounts, you get the point, right? It can never hurt financially to give back to the Father what is already his. He is the one that gave it to us in the first place. And he will continue to give us what we need. And we think that if we give, it's going to hurt financially. But God gave you all that in the first place. He's asking for us to give a portion of it back. And when we do, we have no faith. We think like, do you think that God's account is empty? Do you think that his needs come up? He'll say, hey, sorry, you gave, sucker. No. And if we don't believe it, he says, test him. Next truth. The truth is we are to give sacrificially, but the lie is we're doing the best we can. Proverbs 3:9, honor the Lord with your wealth and with the best part of everything you produce. We are to give sacrificially to God. That means we don't just give the little portions of our leftovers to God. We don't give God the beaters to lick after baking the cake of our dreams. God asks us for the first 10% of what we make when we bring it in. Now, I realize the government jumps the gun and they take it from you before it ever reaches your hands. But what you made was prior to the government getting their fingers on it. We give 10% of what we make prior to taxes. The government takes their piece and we live off the rest. Now, there are some that argue about the 10% idea. I get it. I realize that we don't like to be told what we're supposed to give. Some will make some arguments of Jesus' comments and whether Jesus firmly said 10% or not. But the scriptures as a whole teach that we are to give a tithe. The definition of a tithe is 10%. I assume that most people that want to argue with 10%, it's because they want to give much less than 10%. The scriptures have always taught a tithe. And if you want to look at the Old Testament, what the Old Testament taught to give, it's probably a little closer to 30%. So I think 10% is a, one of my good friends says, is a good starting point. But the real problem is not the percentage that we give, but the condition of our hearts when it comes to giving. We argue the percent of what we're supposed to give before taxes, after taxes, 10%, 5%, whatever it might be, when giving doesn't bring us joy. If giving does not bring you joy, you will fight giving. And giving lacks joy when we love our money. We give to God what does not hurt, what we don't want or don't need. We give him what I would call the gristle left over after we finish eating all the steak that we want. We give him the crust that we cut off our bread. He gets the core of our apples, the peel from our bananas. And then we want to pat ourselves on the back and claim that we are givers. Jesus observed a story and preserved it for us to remember in Mark chapter 12. Jesus sat down near the collection box in the temple and watched as the crowds dropped in their money. Many rich people put in large amounts, and then a poor widow came and dropped in two small coins. Jesus called his disciples to him and said, "I tell you the truth, this poor widow has given more than all the others who are making contributions, for they gave a tiny part of their surplus. But she, poor as she is, has given everything she had to live on." Listen to this carefully. This could be the foundation stone to your giving. God could care less how much you give. It doesn't matter if it's 2 pennies or $2 billion. It doesn't impress him. He's not interested. He doesn't need your money. Did you know that? He's not in need of it. If you think you want to keep it, hang on to it. He doesn't need it. He is concerned about only one thing when you give. That's this. The condition of this heart when it gives the money. And you can try and conceal it and cover it up. You can't do it. He knows it. And he's looking for generous givers who love to give back, who love to join him in the work of his kingdom, who are excited about partnering with him, those who are willing to break down their idols. I couldn't help but think about that as we were singing that song, "Burn Them All Down." All those idols of money. And to give generously from this place. That's what God sees. And though these other people were making these huge contributions, they were making it out of a small percentage of their surplus. God could care less. It didn't matter about the big amount. And this widow that gave just two little coins was an embarrassment to everyone there. God praised her because she gave everything she had. She left that place having to fully 100% rely on God for the next meal and provision. And that's what Jesus praised, was the condition of her heart. Next truth, giving is evidence of our spiritual maturity. And the lie is we should feel proud about how much we give. Matthew 6:3 says, "But when you give to someone in need, don't let your left hand know what your right hand is doing." I will tell you this. One of the very last spiritual disciplines that happen in the life of a believer is giving. If I could use only one test to see if someone was ready for Christian leadership, it would be their giving. I don't mean how much they give. I mean their heart towards giving. The evidence in their life that they are givers. Because I believe that a person that gives is ready to serve the Lord in leadership. And I believe that a person that does not give is in no place to be serving in Christian leadership. Now I realize someone can give for the wrong reasons and not be spiritually mature in their giving. But that's a pretty rare person. For the most part, if people give, they get it. They get what it means to usher in God's kingdom. They get the idea of what stewardship really is. They get the idea that they are working with God and that the things of materialistic worship only pull them farther away from God. So what am I saying today? I guess as simple as this. Be a giver and be generous. If you feel that some organization or even a church doesn't seem to have a pure motivation in their presentation of you giving, close your checkbook and be a good steward of what God has given you. Don't give to them. Find places that are also good stewards. Find churches that are taking the money that is coming in and doing the work of the kingdom with it. Not growing their own temple or their own monument, but are investing in the lives of other people and bringing God's kingdom near. Give money to people who are also good stewards with what God gives them. It is a big step of faith to give 10% off the top. I know it, because I've been there. I remember when Jenny and I first made the commitment, and I actually tallied up what 10% was. And I thought, oh my goodness. We've never turned back. We had financial difficulties along the way. You better believe it. But the blessings in our life and the life of others, ones we know and ones we won't know till we get to the kingdom. This is the one area God says test him on. But when you think back over your faith journey, hasn't it always been the tough, difficult steps of faith that have been the things that have catapulted your spiritual maturity? There have been the times in my life when I have grown the most in my maturity as a follower of Christ. The times when I stepped out of my safety and comfort and stepped into what I would call God's invitation to join him in the kingdom. We do not give out of guilt. We give because Christians are still being persecuted for their faith. We give because 1.5 billion people still live and die in extreme poverty. We give because our neighbors around this church have not encountered Christ, but because our giving, they will. We give to usher in God's kingdom. We give to be a part of something bigger than ourselves. We give because indifference was not an option for Jesus, and it can't be an option for us. We give to change our hearts and to change our world. We give because we worship one God, and that God is not money. We give because we were bought at an immeasurably high price. We give because God gave and gives and will never stop giving. And that's why we give. Application? You ready, ushers? We're going to give. Never out of obligation. Never out of guilt. Never out of because what someone else might see or what someone else might think. Don't give because you think the pastor might see it and be happy about you. God looks at one thing every time we drop a dollar in the plate, and that's the condition of our heart. It's a growth process. If you need help along the way, we would love to encourage you or give you some resources. If you need to talk to other people who have taken this step of giving, and you just want to like talk to some real people who have done it, we would like to partner you with some of those people. You can hear some of their stories. But if you feel that Hillcrest is looking for your money, please keep it. That's not what we're asking for. These messages come once in a long while here at Hillcrest. We believe that the scriptures have a lot to say about giving, and I will tell you that giving has a huge thing to do with your spiritual maturity. So we are compelled to teach on it. Let's pray for the gift we're about to give. Father God, we thank you for your love for us. And Lord, you have given all of us so much. And as we give back to you, we give in faith that these monies will go to further the work of your kingdom. Help us to be great stewards of these resources. We thank you for organizations that we partner with, like Community Outreach and others, who help us to be the best stewards we possibly can. Lord, I thank you for the passion this church has had in giving money away, supporting other organizations. Lord, in adopting children, the idea of orphans and supporting our widows. And Lord, I think of even the financial gifts that have been given for us to go over to South Sudan and to bring water to a people who so desperately need clean water. God, may you be glorified in the gifts that are given here. May we rally together, and may our three cords be stronger than our cord alone. Thank you for your love for us, and as we give this gift, may you use it to further the work of your kingdom. We're thankful you've invited us to join you. In Jesus' name.
do you really think he expects something back? Now, I know there's a lot of people at church that would not understand this line of reasoning. That's why, just to make things simple and not to cause any controversy, I like to carry what I call the little empty envelope, all right? You see, when the plate gets passed, I bloop, put it in there like that. The deacon's counting the money. They only know me as the crazy empty envelope guy, but the people sitting around me, clueless. I win, they win, God wins. No one gets hurt because no one knows.
God knows.
Huh?
I only agreed to make this video if they promised not to tell you who I am. I mean, it's really none of your business. And it's also none of your business how much I give. I'm not going to brag about it, okay? I mean, yeah, it's cool. I just got married, and I have a kid, okay? And sure, you know, we get around. We're doing okay. But look, who I am and what I give is, it's between God and I, okay? I mean, the sacrifices I make are between me and God, and my reward is in heaven. So look, don't try to figure out who I am or what I give, because honestly,
It's none of your business.
I tithe. Okay, that's a lie. I don't tithe. I want to tithe. That's a lie, too. I don't even think about it. Seriously, you think God's up there, like, with a big old checklist going, hey, you tithe, you don't tithe? I don't buy that at all. Okay, I kind of buy that. Because what I say, give to God what is God's, and give to Caesar what is Caesar's. I don't even know any Caesars. That's a lie. I know four Caesars, even the little one.
Let me ask you a question, huh? How's your mutual fund? Hey, for that matter, how's all your funds? Has the fund left your funds, huh? Has your do-re-mi taken a W-A-L-K, huh? What if I told you that I knew about an investment you could make that the return would be mind-boggling? And it's promised. It's guaranteed. I know what you're saying. There's no guarantees. This one's guaranteed, okay? Malachi 3:10. So it says in the Old Testament. It says, test me, give to God, and he will give you back. It goes like this. I give this, he gives this. I give this, he gives this. I give this. Right up there. He keeps giving. I can't outgive God. How crazy is that? Do I love him? Sure, whatever. I'm just saying, if you give, he gives back. Crazy, isn't it? It works, though. How do you think I afforded that house in Tahiti? Oh, what time is it? It's tithing time.
I tithe. But just not like in the form of a 10% check, per se. Let me tell you what I mean. When I go to church on a Sunday morning, they're selling donuts, I buy some. Boom, that's a tithe. When my whole Sunday school class wants donuts, and I, out of the goodness of my heart, buy a whole bunch for the Sunday school class, boom, that's another tithe. But it's not about me spending money. It's about the smile on people's faces. That, my friends, is tithe enough for me. Case in point, the church was having date nights where we could take our spouse out for an evening, and they were charging $25 for childcare. Boom, shakalaka, tithe. I'll tell you what the biggest tithe was. When I spent over $100 on our meal, and my wife was grinning ear to ear, that, my friend's a tithe.
I would like to give. I would, okay? But everything right now is just crazy. I mean, just crazy, you know? I mean, not normal crazy, really crazy, you know? And if after I paid my bills and took care of the things that I need and want, then I would consider giving something, but not now is crazy. We're going to give later. We've already talked about it. I mean, down the road, we'll be crazy givers, but right now, it's just crazy.
Yeah, I have money. That's a fact. But you know what? It's a heart thing between me and the Lord and the pastor, because he needs to know what I'm giving now that we have this little building campaign going on, if you know what I'm saying. And pastor, I'd give a little bit more. I'd give a little something if you'd have that music minister sing a couple more hymns now and then, huh? Hey, watch this. Watch this. Is that a Benjamin? I think it is. Benji likes hymns. Come on. You want it? Come on, pastor. Do what I say, huh?
Oh, in my life, Lord, be glorified in me. I put money in the plate. Wait, wait, wait. Look what I have here. I hope it doesn't interfere. That everyone can hear how I give with cheer. That everyone could be like me.
Jazz hands.
that's none of us, right? Sure. God bless you all. Thank you for coming today. We hope that you are blessed by this. Next week, we start a new series that we're excited about. And let's see the exact... I mean, we're exploring Christianity, some of the things about Christianity, like asking some questions. We invite you back next week. God bless you. As you go from here, you're dismissed.